Hi, this is Joe Patty. Thanks for listening to WRTI Online. This service is made possible through the support of WRTI's members. You can become a member, too. Since you're already online, just visit www.wrti.org and click the Become a Member link on the upper left corner of the webpage. You can also join us by phone at 1-866-809-9784. Your membership will help keep WRTI's broadcast and online services strong. And again, thank you. Now, on with the show.
Hilary Hahn began playing the violin at the age of 4. Her major orchestral debut with the Baltimore Symphony at the age of 12 marked her entrance into the professional world of music, where she has continued to prove herself as a talent to be watched. She has achieved international acclaim and continues to offer an exciting and ever-expanding repertoire, crossing musical boundaries and proving her versatility. We caught up with her during her current tour and look forward to her recital on March 1st at the Kimmel Center in Philadelphia. Congratulations, first and foremost, on winning the Grammy. That's very exciting.
Thank you.
You're going to be appearing at the Kimmel Center in recital, I understand. And
yes.
You will be playing, is it Hungarian or folk songs with piano?
It's 3 Ives sonatas, 2 Ivai sonatas, Romanian dances by Bartok, Hungarian dances by Brahms, and a short piece by Ivai called Crescent Song.
Well, now I don't know where to start with you. You're on tour, is that right? Right now,
I am on tour. Yeah, I'm in Akron right now.
Akron, okay. And is this a United States tour, or are you going to be going to Europe, or have you been there already?
Well, this part of the tour is a U.S. tour. We went to Japan in January, and then we took a little break and did our own thing. Valentina and I did separate engagements, and then we came back together for this U.S. tour. And then we take a little break, and then we go to Europe in March. So, it's kind of continuous and kind of separate tours.
Is that going to be recital, or are you going to be doing some symphonic work with the orchestra?
Well, the stuff I do with Valentina is all recitals, and then in between, I'm doing engagements with orchestra. So I gave the world premiere of Jennifer Higdon's violin concerto
yes.
in Indianapolis a few weeks ago, and I'm doing another premiere, the Canadian one in Toronto, at the beginning of March, so not too long after Philadelphia.
Yeah. Now, I have to ask you, first of all, the Schoenberg is marvelous, and the Sibelius breathtaking as well on that album. I have to tell you, you did a beautiful, beautiful job. Just beautiful.
Thank you.
Now, I read somewhere that when you were studying at Curtis, you learned, 28 concertos? Is that right?
I don't know. I have so many in my repertoire, it's hard to remember how many I learned where.
I'll tell you why.
I covered a lot of ground with Mr. Bradsky.
Yeah, I that's why I'm asking you, because it looks to me like you are recording every one of them. You're coming out very, very rapidly with recordings of major concerti. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about how you attacked the Schoenberg and what kind of response you got or have been getting from your audiences.
Well, with the Schoenberg, it's a long process, just like any piece. And I've played it live many times, and every time it's a good response. At first, I was kind of surprised because I'd heard so much ambivalence towards the work as far as what people say about it. And I didn't feel that. And I was hoping that that the good sides of the work would come across. And because there's so much beautiful and strong about that piece.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really happy when the response was good. And now I kind of expect that people are going to really enjoy it because I've got so much good feedback about the piece and about how it comes across when I play it. And I don't think it has to do with my playing in particular. I think it may be the way I approach it. I always make sure that there's a lot of rehearsal time. And I approach it like any other piece, like, a romantic and classical work, because it has these elements that are so very grounded in romanticism. And it has some very structural elements, but it also has a lot of really emotional points that can't be skipped over. So I try to make sure, whoever I'm working with, that we focus on all of that and get it as much true to the score as possible.
Well, you know, early Schoenberg is very romantic and also very well written for strings. That, of course, is, this is later Schoenberg. When was this written, the Schoenberg, the violin concerto?
I don't remember the exact years, but it was written in the time when he went from Europe to the States. So part of it was written in Europe, and then part of it was written in Los Angeles.
So it was a much later work, yeah.
Yeah, the thing is, you know, they differentiate between early Schoenberg and later Schoenberg and say, oh, you know, this is easier to listen to and this is harder and this is, you know, more beautiful and this is more esoteric. And I think if you as a player approach it that way, then you're already dictating what people are going to hear. I think it's important to approach everything that you do, whenever it was written, by whomever, as, you know, an equal blank slate to everything else that you do. And you have to go back to the score and look at it and make decisions based on what the score tells you and what you hear in the music and not based on what it's supposed to be or what the general impression is of it.
Oh, I guess that works for all music. I think it's up to the artist really to interpret. But, of course, many of the concerti that you have recorded are more romantic. The Elgar was very beautiful. And, of course, The Barber is one of my favorites, your recording of The Barber.
Great.
And you love Bach, I understand.
Yeah, every so often I do a Bach album, so I figured it was about time again.
He always keeps you on the road, right? Straight and narrow.
Yeah, the thing about Bach, it's not that Bach does things that other composers don't. Of course he does. Everyone does different things. But as a composer and as a part of the violin repertoire, I find that the stuff that exists from Bach is it's the right balance of challenging in all ways and yet rewarding. So it's challenging technically, it's challenging interpretively. It never solidifies into just one thing that is that for all the time that you play it. It's always changing. So at the same time, it's great music, and the more that you put into it, the more you get out of it. But it really does keep you on your toes in every aspect of your playing. So that's why I try to stay in touch with it, especially the solo, the sonatas and partitas. And the other works by Bach that incorporate other performers at the same time, there's something really pure about it, but also very tricky to balance interpretively. And in that case, you're doing with other people what you do on your own in the sonatas and partitas. So it all ties together.
More of an ensemble approach, I guess, right?
Yeah, and instead of balancing all the voices yourself, you have other people's interpretations to balance as well.
Mm-hmm. Which
and
is always
there's
interesting.
There's so many different
yeah.
possible mm-hmm. approaches to Bach that you often have stylistic differences to balance too. And that's challenging in a lot of good ways. You know, you have to rethink your approach and really decide what's important and kind of negotiate an interpretation that works well for everyone. And you can just relax into that. Well, you can never just forget about it and just do whatever. You have to make sure that it's all working in concert with everyone else.
As a musician, you know, there are not favorites, but some challenges perhaps that you look forward to?
Yeah, definitely. I've got some projects that I'm planning, but I can't, I could do them now, I would do them, but I can't do everything at once. You know, every project I put out represents something about kind of my artistic purpose or whatever. Maybe where
you are artistically.
It all reflects that.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you make the decisions with the recording company, is that right?
Yeah, together. Mm-hmm. It has to be an album that they want to release, and it has to be an album that I want to record. And I'm up for suggestions from them, and luckily the companies I've worked with have been, no one company wants to record everything that an artist comes up with, but these companies have been very good at being flexible and open to ideas, so that's been nice.
Now, this recital that you're doing at the Kimmel Center, you think you'll be recording that not at the concert, but generally speaking, do you think you'll be recording anything like that in a solo album with piano?
It would be nice to do an album of some of that repertoire. You have to pick the right project out of a recital. It's kind of hard to just record the entire recital and release it unless it's a very United Project.
No, I'm saying like some of the Izai things are very beautiful. And
well, at some point I will record the Izai solo sonatas. And that's one of those projects I've got ahead of me. It'll be a while till I get to that, just because of a lineup of things.
Well, we're trying to keep up with you, Hillary. You have an inexhaustible energy and creativity, and it's exciting to see how your career has developed and the kudos that you've gotten. And congratulations once again, and we look forward to your next album.
I'm really looking forward to being in Philly again.
Great. It'll be fun. Good luck.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Joe Patty. Thanks for listening to WRTI Online. This service is made possible through the support of WRTI's members. You can become a member, too. Since you're already online, just visit www.wrti.org and click the Become a Member link on the upper left corner of the webpage. You can also join us by phone at 1-866-809-9784. Your membership will help keep WRTI's broadcast and online services strong. And again, thank you. Now, on with the show.
And we'd like to welcome Marisa here today to Crossover.
Thank you.
And I think you are a star already, and a star in an area that is rather unique. For our audience, can you explain what is the fado?
Well, fado is a music was born by the African slaves and the Portuguese sailors. They say, some musicologists say the first appearance of fado was in Brazil, like a dance music.
Yes.
And as I don't know if most of the people know, but Brazil used to be a Portuguese colony.
Yes.
So when our king returned to Portugal, he brought all the court, all the slaves, and suddenly at the end of the 19th century, this type of music appeared in Portugal, but singed, not danced. That is a music we make part of working classes. It's from poor people.
Yes.
It's a music at the end of the 19th century. It was more or less the CNN of the working classes, because was the music we used to bring the news. It's a music we make the commemoration of all the different types of feelings of life, you know. Like, for example, the sweet Portuguese melancholy, sadness, death, but at the same time, love, passion, lost loves, happiness, everything. No, everything like, we make part of life is included in this type of music.
Like the tango is in Argentina, I guess.
Yes.
The same kind of background.
Yes, they are cousins.
Yes, cousins, okay. And now the style, though, is a particular style?
Well, it's... Normally, we use acoustic instruments. We don't use electrical guitars or nothing like that.
Yes.
It's always acoustic instruments. We have a traditional instrument who is come from the lute. We call the Portuguese guitar.
Yes.
It have a shape of a small heart with 12 strings and have the sound of, sometimes have the sound of small tears. You know?
Yes, yes. Oh, yes. So how does one learn fado?
To learn fado, you don't have school. It's an oral tradition.
Yes.
It's the old one who passed the message to the youngest ones. And that message only could be passed if you know what is the traditional fado. That's why we are trying to ask to UNESCO to make traditional fado mundial and oral heritage. And that's why we are working. I'm ambassador trying to spread the word outside of Portugal with my music. And we have Carlos do Carmo, who is the most important male fado voice in Portugal, who is working with musicologists, with the Fado Museum, and working with all that documents. And then at the end, they normally show me what they are, the documents, and what they are trying to send to UNESCO.
Are there many people that sing fado in Portugal?
In the last 5 years, yes, started appearing a lot of people. When I started singing, because I started singing with 5 years old.
Yes, you were a child.
Yeah.
What happened? You just sang because it appealed to you, or you were musical, or what?
Well, I grew up in the most traditional neighborhood in Lisbon, where father was born at the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
And father was surrounding me all the time. My parents, they have a small taverna, and they used to make it the weekends, some afternoons with father.
Mm-hmm.
And I started listening to music, and I started asking to sing, and my father started doing some cartoons, and I started learning by the cartoons because I didn't know how to read. So father was my first toy, my first doll, you know.
Are the lyrics standard or are
no,
they traditional?
No, it's poetry all the time.
It's poetry, mm-hmm.
All the time. And each fado singer choose their own poem to sing.
So it's not handed down from generation to generation. It's something
it's passed, but the music, because what we have is about 200 traditional fados with everybody could sing the same music, but each person choose their own poem.
To the
so
music.
So the tradition will pass by the old generation to the young generation is the music, you know. And sometimes some traditional poems, normally we don't let them die or disappear.
Right.
But what passed from generation to generation is the music. And some traditional things.
Have you
like
ever
the
written
the way of being, like the way of using clothes, some mysticism,
uh-huh.
Some mystic things like that.
Have you ever written any lyrics for them?
No, I don't. I don't write. It's very important to live in a traditional neighborhood. It's very important because fado comes from the working classes.
Yes,
and the working classes who were living in the neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
So fado was sung in the neighborhoods. So I grew up in one of the most traditional ones, fortunately. And in each corner, each street, each house, everybody was singing or playing a fado record or, you know, so fado was surrounding me all the time, you know, surrounding me. And my father had a small taverna, and he started doing fado, and it was everything was fado. So fado for me is like breathing.
Well, again, I guess what I'm trying to get from you is if you say it's a traditional fado song, are there songs that people learn or remember or you learned from hearing them? I mean,
yeah, you have to know them.
So they're songs, I mean, and they're verses. They're,
yes,
there's
you
poetry.
Have to know them.
So you
each
learn
person
them.
Person choose their own verse,
uh-huh.
Our own poem,
mm-hmm.
But we could sing the same song.
Is the melody the same?
It's the melody the same.
Okay, so the melody is, that's what I'm asking. So it's like a traditional melody, and then you can put your own words to it,
yes,
is that right?
Yeah. We work with metrics.
Uh-huh.
So 4, 6,
okay.
5,
beat. Okay.
8,
okay.
10, 12.
Right. And you improvise probably because it is a very natural kind of thing. Yes?
Well, we never sing the same thing twice,
uh-huh, right,
in fado. You
right.
know, it depends what you're feeling in your mood and
yeah.
everything. Even I'm doing halls now, you know, theaters.
Yes,
large
ones.
And I never
ones.
Thought that could happen to me.
Yeah. Well, you've touched the hearts of people. I mean, I think emotion is universal, you know, just sadness, longing, disappointment, happiness. It's all those. That's the human condition.
Yeah.
And you're expressing it. But it's in a certain way. I mean, I listen to the some of the new tracks that you have here, and I don't know fado, but I said, oh, that's beautiful. That's it. I get it. You know, and I don't know the words and I don't know the music, but I get it. And I think that's what we're talking about here. Isn't that true?
Yes, it is. But, you know, I never thought like doing theaters or singing in this wonderful
large,
places
yeah,
where
tremendous
I've been doing
falls,
touring
yeah.
mm-hmm. and all of that. And it's amazing because I'm coming from a very poor family. I was learning fado in the streets and tavernas. And suddenly I'm trying to show to the world what it is. And how, people are asking me, like, what it is? Explain us what it is.
That's true. I think it's the word. You know, they say the fado in its traditional, what is fado? Fado is like the blues, or it's words.
It's music.
It's music that
you know, of course, like, for example, tango. Tango have our own roots and everything. Bossa nova, mm-hmm. blues, rebetica, fado. But at the end, it's like squeezing a lemon. You get the juice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we are talking about music.
Well, I can only tell you that this album, certainly, as I said earlier, touches me, and I know that you had tremendous success, and look forward to hearing you perform at the Kimmel Center on March.
Yes, you are going to be there?
I'll try to be there, yes. I would love to say hello to you.
Are you going to see all the concept of the concerto Terra and the record Terra, because the concert is based on Terra.
The album. It's beautiful, and I look forward to it. And
thank
I thank you for taking the time out. I know you're very busy.
Thank you very much.
And it's a pleasure speaking with you,
Marisa. It was my pleasure.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Thank you so much.